Blog Talk Radio.
We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hi, Kelly. It's Marty.
Hey, Marty. How's it going? I can barely hear you.
Hey, Kelly. I wanted to tell you, in the late 1970s, I think it was 1977, I saw Greg Allman at the Los Angeles Forum.
Uh-huh.
And I was used to hard rock shows. I was used to seeing Aerosmith and Led Zeppelin and, you know, that genre. And, I went there not really knowing what to expect, and when he came out on stage, he was dressed to a T in a white suit, typical of Southern men, and which kind of took me aside because I was a Southern Californian, and he had this blonde hair all the way down to the middle of his back, and frankly, he was gorgeous.
Yeah.
And the whole 20,000 people at the L.A. Forum, you know, that's where the Lakers used to play.
Yeah.
Nobody said anything, and usually these rock concerts start off. You know, everybody's just yelling. And he held everybody spellbound for not long, just, I'd say 90 minutes. He didn't give a long show. He gave about a 90-minute show. It wasn't even 2 hours. But he just played the piano, Kelly. Yeah, did you know he...
Yeah, well,
just great.
What happened was he got a guitar, and then what happened is the dad of the Allman Brothers was... I think he was military. He picked up he took a guy from a bar. He gave him a ride somewhere, and that guy ended up killing him for his car. And so these boys lost their dad, and then their mother, I think she learned how to be an accountant or whatever, and they moved around and eventually moved to Florida. But Greg learned the guitar, and then he showed his brother, and his brother picked it up and was so good that Greg moved on to the keyboard, and he picked up a Hammond B3. A Hammond B3 is the great organ of the rock era, and it has the Leslie speaker that the speakers were rotated inside, and so it makes kind of a throbbing sound. And that was what he said the day that he got that, he started writing songs, and Midnight Rider was one of them. But he was a very accomplished musician. I don't think that people understood what a talented songwriter he was. You know, you're in a band, nobody really knows where the songs come from, you know?
And I never understood why they broke up. It was the Allman Brothers, and then by the time I saw him, it was Greg Allman. Himself solo, no lead act, no following act.
Dwayne Allman was on a motorcycle. Dwayne Allman was a real reckless guy. And so he got this motorcycle and he was driving it down. I think it was in Georgia, but he's driving down the road and there was a truck that had stopped, a big truck stopped right in front of him. And I think he clipped the back of the truck and went down and was dead. But they lost the, basically, I think Dwayne was the leader, but Dwayne, at being the great, he wasn't just a great guitar player, he was also unparalleled as a live improvising guitar player. And so when Eric Clapton did Layla, he brought in Dwayne Allman as an extra guitar, and I guess they just had incredible chemistry. But you can't lose somebody like that from your band and not have it really affected, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like when Zeppelin lost John Bohan, their drummer, they said, we quit.
Yeah.
I didn't understand why the Who kept going after they lost Keith Moon, because that wasn't the Who anymore.
Yeah.
Keith Moon was one of the fastest drummers in the world.
Yeah.
When he left, he changed the band, and I never understood why Pete Townsend kept that band together.
I was going to say, for some of these guys, they don't know what else to do, but Greg Allman was a real force of nature.
Yeah, the last thing I wanted to say is apparently at the time I saw him, he was dating Cher.
Oh, okay.
And obviously that didn't pan out much, but that I found that really interesting, because Cher back in, you know, late 1970s was quite a nice-looking lady.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he's a guy that could have had any woman that he wanted, you know, but I think that he was seen as a sellout. People didn't like the fact that she was pop music, and the Allman Brothers were icons, not just of Southern rock, but of blues, white blues. And so I think people saw him as a sellout from that point, which is, I don't really pay any attention to that period of his life, but I mean, I don't know. Who knows? Like you say, it didn't work out, but none of his relationships worked out. I think he was married 6 times. So the life of a rock star, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Have a good day. All right. So anyway, we got to celebrate our great, the musicians in a country, in a society are the most accomplished ones, are great gems, you know, they're a great treasures to be enjoyed. Okay, so this is what I was going to say. Just throw this out to you. Okay, the aspirational world. What's an aspiration? I aspire for something. I aspire to be a millionaire. I aspire to drive a Rolls Royce. I want to be successful. I want, you know, these things. Do I have the right to a Rolls Royce? No, of course not. I think the left is dominated by magical thinking. And magical thinking, I did a little clip of a show on that before. Magical thinking is confusing what you want to be with what it is. And so a lot of the stuff that Obama focused on was aspirational. Having an open border it's unsafe, you know? I mean, that's like living in a house without a front door. It might be an aspiration of yours to live in a community that's so safe that you don't have to worry about security, but it's an aspiration. It's not reality. And I think like the social justice warriors, they see certain changes in society as being, like, for example, feminism. Feminism goes from an aspiration, all women being treated the same as men, having the same job opportunities, not being subjected to sexual harassment and stuff, and other ideas. And that goes from an aspiration into a part of society that nobody can deny. And if anybody disagrees with it, then they're the worst scumbag. Nobody's in an aspirational society. Nobody is allowed to disagree, because you're disagreeing with reality. And what the left doesn't understand is, by doing this, number one, they're separating out a lot of people that don't agree. Number two, they're making themselves look like fanatics, and then they act like fanatics. And you're bringing in unstable elements into the society. For example, let's say that we want universal health care. That's an aspiration. Everybody deserves health care, no matter how much, you know, great health care, no matter how much money they make. Right? That's an aspiration. We treat it as a right. And the question is, let's say it's a great aspiration. if you treat it as a right, then you have to deal with at some point whether the society can afford it. For example, is the economy big enough to spin off as a side element free health care, universal health care? Or just, let's just say universal, highly developed and deep health care, easy to access for very cheap. It doesn't have to necessarily be free, but what would end up happening is that the government would carry here's what I think the mistake is from the left, and I think it is poisoning people's minds. I think that you see in a lot of these younger people, the millennials, I get millennials, but you see it in other people too, the sense of entitlement, I think, is connected to the aspirational society, because people see or think about things that they want, and they believe that they're due those things. It's not an aspiration to them. They've got to have them, and people who have them need to hand them over. And if they don't, then they're bad. In the meantime, the aspirational society is not grateful because it feels like it's owed all these aspirations. It thinks it has rights to them. That's what I think is going on. And I just think that what happened in Portland, it would be a shame, and I admit that I don't know all the facts, but it would be a shame if these guys jumped up because they've been buoyed, they've been kind of carried along by this politically correct Ten Commandments, and somebody violates one of the Ten Commandments on race and religion, and especially it's not all religion, it's definitely not Christianity. You don't need to defend that. You need to defend Islam. And so these guys kind of pop up like Jack in the Boxes, and they rush over there and confront this psychotic person who then lashes out with a knife. It sounds to me like that's what happened. I have not heard anywhere that he had confronted and he was in the face of these girls. I believe he was just on the same bus, but I think it shows the tragedy of having a mistaken idea of who you are and why you're here. That's why we have a police force, you know? And Kathy can get up and rant at me and tell me how shameful I am, but I think it's, you know, anybody can think of themselves as a hero, but there's something about the far left, far leftism, the social justice warrior, I'm here to fight for these things, and all of these things just happen to fit in with what is currently popular in society. And so you're getting up and fighting really for the vision of the elites, or you're fighting, you're basically a propagandized puppet who's been trained to react by these triggers. So just my take on it, but I think it's a terrible development. And you know, it does sound like those were good people that got killed, so misguided maybe a little bit, but the one guy graduated with a degree in economics from Reed College. Reed College is one of the most difficult schools to get into in America, so he must have been a brilliant guy. 634 Kelly O'Connell, Local News. We'll be right back. AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. 523-1450, 805-6180 to text. And I wanted to, I want to play one little clip here. One of the big deals what I'm calling the aspirational movement, this far left, the socialism or whatever you want to call it, has, you know, there are certain things that are kind of third rail issues. The third rail is the part of the you know, if you're on an electric you know, on a subway and it's electrified, touching the third rail means getting electrocuted. So you can't, there is an issue with whether some of these movements can be criticized. The global warming movement and the advocates can't be criticized. Advocates for feminism cannot be criticized, or feminism. And so you've got a situation where we have topics, secular topics, not religious topics, in the society that are treated as being the equal of any religion, the equal of any holy script. And so it creates a problem, because then you can't have a dialogue, these things. You can't dialogue about them, because you can't have an open debate over whether, you know, if somebody believes that everyone should get free health care and an unlimited amount of excellent health care, and it's a right, and it's not up for debate, which is what a lot of these people think, then anybody who criticizes that becomes a monster, is a demon. And so I think one of the things that we need to try to do is move back into an area where, I mean, you're in a society, the society only has so much time and money. We should be able to talk about everything that we want to spend money on, including global warming, if that's a societal good. I'm just saying, if the society decides that it wants to work against global warming, it's got to be an open debate about what the goal is, how much money is going to be spent, how much resources. Every society has a limited amount of resources. And so instead of that, what the left does is it tries to drag these shibboleths. A shibboleth is something that is, like I say, it's kind of beyond criticism, and it's kind of a password in a way. It's an icon. You know, an icon is another word for the bust or a picture of a god. These are gods that they're dragging around behind them. Feminism, abortion, global warming. So you hear a lot of these people talking about a livable wage, where they're talking about things. We need social justice. You have to be able to define within the context of the assets of the community, of the wealth of the community, how important this idea is, and how much you're going to be willing to spend on it. And it's got to be an open public debate. And if it's not, then it's very destructive to the society. Now, here, I'm just going to give you an example. There is, and I hope you can follow this. I know it's a little bit abstract, but there is a very famous statue of a bull in New York that represents the bull run of the stock market. Now, there's somebody made a statue of a fearless girl, this little girl that is standing up with her chest out and her nose up. And she represents the need to bring more women. I mean, what she represents, I'll play a little clip here. A guy didn't like that. And he made a, and these are all cast, you know, cast in metal, bronze or whatever. Another guy came along and he cast a pug bull peeing on the leg of the girl as a criticism. So you can't criticize in the current phase of society, you can't criticize feminism because it's an icon, it's a shibboleth. It is this great movement that cannot be criticized. And I'm saying, to survive as a society, I do think we need to move away from that, the idea that some of these ideas have to be, people have to fall down in front of them and bow down to them. We've got to treat them as an aspiration for some part of society, and then have a conversation on how much time and money we want to spend on it, knowing that we can't get to all of our aspirations. Now, here's a little bit on this fearless girl, joined briefly by the ping pug statue. This is from CNN Money.
We have a reminder of the need for companies to increase the number of women on boards. A bronze statue called Fearless Girl now stands facing off against the Wall Street Bull, intended as a symbol to promote gender diversity at the very top level. It was put there by investment management firm State Street Global Advisors. And I love those little girls stopping to look at it. It has become quite a talking point already in its first 24 hours. The firm's deputy chief investment officer, Lori Heinkel, joins me now. Lori, there is nothing like a fantastic visual to get us all talking, and this certainly seems to be it. What was the message that you wanted to send?
Well, as stewards of over $2.5 trillion in assets, we believe it's our job to make sure that companies are doing the right things to drive shareholder value. And one of those things is diversity. What you find repeatedly is that diverse boards inspire companies to make better decisions and drive better results. And so we thought, what more iconic symbol than to put a young girl as a symbol of women standing there next to or facing off against, depending upon how you look at it, the bull as a symbol of our commitment to that.
And
that diverse stance.
Absolutely. And I think you hit it right on the head from what everyone I've talked
to. Oh, I just want to point out one thing here. It's another element of leftism to believe in karma. They don't believe in natural law. They don't believe in a law above the law. They believe in karma. So this lady just said it right here. Diverse company is going to perform better. So the more women they hire in this company, the better it's going to do financially. Is that true? I don't know of any studies that show that, but
they can't wait to bring their daughters there to show them if they already haven't showed them online. But there is a very serious goal here that you just mentioned. You know, why we hear a lot of companies give lip service to this. I have had many on saying we need diversity, and yet it's not happening fast enough. What can we do to push it? And what is the role of firms like yours?
Yeah. Well, we are, in a sense, permanent capital. And so the way that we can drive change is to make our voices known, to engage with board members, to engage with company management, and talk about those issues that are important to us. Board governance is something that we find critically important. Better boards just make better decisions and drive company change in a more proactive way. And so by engaging with them around the need to have more diverse boards, in this case women, we can actually vote with our conscience and drive the change that's necessary. You might know this, but literally 1 in 4 companies in the Russell 3000 has no woman on their boards, and nearly 60% have fewer than 15% of women. So this is a real issue in terms of having the diversity needed to make good decisions.
What's the reaction from boards that you've spoken to? You're going to put them on notice if they don't already know. Well, what's the reaction from them? What have they said?
Well, we've been involved with board activism, in a sense, for many years now. And what we find is they actually like having that dialogue. They value the opinions of their shareholders, and we're giving them good advice about actionable things that they can do. So we find, generally speaking, that companies are very interested in the engagement with shareholders like ourselves. And we believe that this topic will be one that they'll be very engaged about as well.
So anyway, they're using this firm to promote social justice. They've got this little girl that's standing up to the bull. And so this guy comes along, his name's Alex Gardega, and he puts this pug that's cast in a lighter material, in a lighter colored, I'm assuming it's metal, it might be some other substance, he put the pug next to the girl, and the pug is peeing on the leg. Now, so why did he do that? And he said people came up and started kicking the dog. He said that he doesn't like things with a false front, and State Street Global Advisors actually sponsored this girl, this fearless girl. And so what you're doing is you're sticking together capitalism, and we're talking about it. They've got $2 trillion in assets. Oh, my God. You're taking major corporation corporate sponsorship and you're putting it together with art and pretending it's art that is just arising out of the ground. And that's what this guy's talking about. And so I think that what this guy's onto is something. I think it is pretentious and it is self-serving and you're conflating a bunch of ideas. One of the people who talked about it said, well, this girl is standing up against the bull. She's standing up against capitalism. Well, you can't have it both ways. If the girl is fearless and wants to join State Street or some other big Wall Street firm, she's not against capitalism. She's for capitalism. But the way the left talks about this stuff, the women can go in and subvert the model. But if they subvert it, what does that mean? I mean, does that mean they're attacking capitalism? So you're taking these major ideas, controversial ideas like feminism, and you're injecting them in, you know, these large companies are taking these idols, these things that are so beloved by people, and they're misusing it to promote their own agenda. That's how I see it. And, you know, the girl's against capitalism, then if capitalism is a bad thing, why not? You know, why is the girl, you know, so why are you trying to lure more women into a bad thing, which is, you know, Wall Street? So anyway, I think that is another example of what we're talking about. We're so inundated with propaganda and there's nobody who's really telling the truth about it. It's these groups and these large multinational corporations and these massive financial institutions, are they there? Do they really care about you and your life and your kids? We'll be right back. 6:51, some local weather. All right, we're running down on time, but I wanted to play a little clip for you on Tiger Woods, who was picked up for a DUI. Check this out.
The greatest champions allow us to forget in their convincing flair through their indomitable will. But the truth is there for all of us. Invincibility is a myth. Frailty and flaw are fact. At his peak, Tiger Woods was more than dominant. He was daunting, able to intimidate the entire field of his sport. That feels like a long time ago. Yes, it has been 9 years since his 14th and last major win, the U.S. Open, on a wrecked leg and shredded knee. In late 2009, his personal life imploded, and the question was, how will he ever come back? In 2013, he had an answer. Woods won 5 times that year, including the Players' Championship, and was again number one in the world. But in early 2014, Woods underwent his first back surgery. His career has yet to recover. That year, Woods missed the Masters for the first time as a pro, competed in 7 tour events, and finished just 2 of them. In 2015, he shot an 82 at the Phoenix Open, walked off after 11 holes at Torrey Pines, and cited another back injury. He'd earned 1 top 10 finish in 11 events, while having 2 more back surgeries. Last year, he missed the entire PGA Tour season. In 2017, Woods debuted at Torrey Pines, a course where he'd won 8 times as a professional. He missed the cut. A week later, he withdrew after the first round in Dubai. In March, on the 20th anniversary of his historic win at the Masters, Woods said he would miss playing at Augusta National for the 3rd time in 4 years. In April, he announced a 4th back surgery to relieve ongoing pain. Then, early Memorial Day morning, 2017, he was arrested for driving under the influence near his home in Jupiter Island, Florida.
All right, so what's going on with Tiger Woods? I read a really interesting article on this, and I'm going to tell you about it in the next hour. But here's a little Tom Pappas sweatpants. Little comedy to take you out of the hour. We'll be back.
Dressed for you people. I was going to get all dressed up nice, but I just didn't do it. It's hard getting dressed up. you know, you look nice for about a half hour and you just feel uncomfortable. Spend thousands of dollars on clothes and you're not nearly as comfortable as when you're at home in your sweatpants. Isn't it true? Big pain on the crotch, hole in the ass. The bottoms are all frayed because you don't even lift your feet up at home. You just... That's why Casual Friday isn't really Casual Friday. Guys in khakis tucking in with a belt. Ooh, going crazy. You really came in casual? Ugh, big beer stains on you. Sweatpants are the best. I think it's the waistband. I think that's really the key. You know, you put, doesn't matter how fat and out of shape you are, you put on your sweats, you're in pretty good shape. Yeah, I'll have another cookie. Why not? I got plenty of room. '30s and '40s, people didn't have sweats. You see the pictures, right? They were raking leaves in three-piece suits. Playing volleyball on the beach in wedding dresses. They were angry people. Sweats came around, happy times. Didn't punch each other so much. You want to bring peace to the Middle East? Don't bring them democracy. Bring them some sweats. You always see those little buggers out there throwing rocks at tanks? They're in dress shoes and slacks. Of course they're pissed off. That's why I want to get really old. My grandmother, that's all she wears is sweatpants. That's old people. They love the sweats. They do. Them and gangster rappers. My Nana and P. Diddy are exactly the same.
All right. So we'll see you back after a break on the hour. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. All right, so I'm looking at the news here, and let me read you your headlines real quick here. But John Boehner, Trump has been a complete disaster. All right, that tells you one of the reasons that we struggled for the last decade is we had leadership that is anti-conservative, it's anti-GOP. It is, you know, so... What these people hope to do, from my observation, you can have your own opinion, of course, but just my take on it is these people hope to pick up bona fides, gold stars, points by slamming their own party. And this is this fantasy that has been held by the conservatives, especially though P4, probably since time immemorial. They understand that they're hated because they oppose the left, but they're going to show, and they're called irrational, crazy, uneducated, stupid. They're going to win points by attacking something or somebody associated with the conservatives or the Republicans. And it just doesn't work. You've already been written off. You know, that's like a Jewish person trying to pick up points with the Nazis by putting down Jerusalem or whatever. Well, actually, there is a lot of Jewish people out there that attack Israel and claim that it's a fascist state or whatever. It's oppressing the so-called Palestinians who are not even mostly from Palestine originally. But anyway, that's another debate. But, you know, this idea you're going to sacrifice your own somebody from your own crowd to get some props from the people that oppose you, that's not respected by the left either. Nobody respects that type of thing. So here's John Boehner, who's trying to use what prestige he has left to do what so many people have tried to do. They've tried to kill Trump, figuratively. They've tried to sacrifice him. And so many people have put their reputations on the line saying Trump will not make it. What he's doing is a disaster. He's going to get impeached. I mean, so I was talking to this guy last night, and we were talking about the strategies that Trump uses. Now, I'm just going to throw this. I am going to get to your headlines, but I just want to just ask you this. this guy Trump has a certain skill set, and I want to ask, and by the way, I don't agree with everything Trump does. That's not the issue, though. We didn't elect somebody who was either, sacrificed or completely destroyed. That's not the options. So we have to get away from this kind of infantile way that the left sees things. We need to come together as a country and get as much done during this guy's presidency as possible. But the idea he's got some fatal flaw and has to be destroyed is out there. Now, let me ask you just a few questions. 523-1450, and I have the text machine with me, 805-6180. I just want to go through a few questions for you. Number one, does it harm the left in their plan to get back in power, to take the House and the Senate and the presidency? Does it harm them if they continually, and this is including the media, which I will add in there, and the Hollywood and all, the university system, everything, this massive elite movement of leftism, does it hurt this group's desire to get back in power if they're constantly talking? It's Chicken Little. The sky is falling every day. Every day, a new statement made about the president in which he's committed some impossibly gigantic mistake, and the entire world is laughing at us. And karma, nature itself, is rising up and throwing off Trump. And he's one step, he's one millimeter away from being impeached. And Russia and all the other so-called scandals. I'm just asking you, does this harm the media's movement, the left's movement, the Democrats? My take on it. The little boy who cried wolf. There's only so many times that you can say somebody's about to be impeached or has done the unforgivable sin, after which people are going to stop paying attention. And I think that's already happened. And I think it hurts the left. And we've got a call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this? Chris, I can barely hear you. Are you there? Yeah, a little better. Yeah. Okay, so thanks for the call. Hope you're well, and what's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to respond to your questions there, and in my way of thinking, the swamp is all about process. Everything is process. Everything is process.
Could you go into more detail? What does process mean?
And so what I mean by that is, everything takes so long to get done, blah, blah, blah. And if you don't do it their way, and they're the professionals, and Trump is a novice and an idiot, and on and on and on it goes. But I think in this case, I'm going to enjoy the process of seeing them self-destroy. Every time they attack Trump, they attack the voters that voted for him.
Right.
And I think what's going to happen is that, nobody ever listens to the media anymore. They know they're liars anymore, the mainstream media. But it's the people who are in office to continue as they are that hate Trump so much. So in my way of thinking, the process of listening to these guys is going to backfire in their face, and they are going to face the repercussions of the voters, that sooner or later people are going to point them. It doesn't matter if they have an R or a D after their name, as far as I'm concerned. They've listened to these people attack the man that they have voted into office over and over and over again. And Boehner's out, crybaby drunk Boehner is out. So, but he just shows that his planting just shows that he's part of that swamp. And process is, you guys just keep this up.
So
we're out here listening to it.
So Chris, let me ask you this, does the process help or hurt Trump?
I think in the long run, I think in the long run, it will help him with the voters. I think in the short run, it's just they think that, and my way, the way I read it is they think by attacking him that they're going to rid us of Trump and what they're doing, and that the whole world is looking at Trump and saying, what a buffoon. And the reality is that they are shooting themselves in the foot. They're making the United States of America look stupid.
Yeah, and so you get this this terror attack in England, and the media here is so caught up in talking about the demise of the impeachment of Trump and Russia and everything that they don't even report it for hours.
Yeah, no, it's just silliness. That myopia that they have. They get so focused on one thing, they can't see anything else. They're just so, you know. I always tell my kids, I said, this is what hate sounds like. Listen to this. This is hate. This is not a thinking individual. This is a person so consumed with hate that they're going to continue to spew these things because this is what hate looks like. That's what it looks like.
Well, and I'm just wondering, and then my follow-up question was, if Trump can get people to react, that's a power, right? I mean, that's if you can get people to react to things that you say and use up energy and emotion, isn't that also, if he wants to use that against them, can't he do that? Is that maybe what he's doing right now?
Well, as you said, we didn't elect a pastor. We didn't elect a saint. We didn't elect somebody that is perfect. We elected somebody that we were sick and tired of what was going on in Washington. And Trump has one thing that just always amazes me, and that is he connects with people.
Yeah.
Talk about, you know, if you listen to him speak, he's a terrible speaker. You know, he gives a subject matter, and then he goes on two or three sentences away from the subject matter, and then he comes back to the subject matter, and everybody's saying, wait a minute, where'd that come from? You know, he's very hard to follow because,
right,
you know, he'll miss a point and then go back and get it. He's not a good speaker.
Right, okay.
However,
people like it, and he talks in simple sentences, and he puts things out there. And I think a lot of people, when they see that the new Supreme Court, Gorsuch go in, they're thrilled inside. When they see the Paris Accord for global warming, we walk away from it. They're thrilled inside. What they see is a consistency in Trump that goes beyond any of the attacks, and they see Trump having victory after victory.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. You know, when every other, I think people are so sick and tired of the other way that politicians do it. They hear the Charlie Brown blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Hey, Chris, I got to take a good call. I got to take a break. Thanks for the call. All right, folks, and I'm sorry, whenever somebody calls in, there's going to be a buzz from that line. There's something wrong with that line, but it used to play music from the other station, so maybe it's healing itself. So, all right, let's take a little break here, and then I want to come back and I want to play for you a classic interaction between a robot, a leftist robot, a news reporter, so-called journalist, who, if you listen to her, she can't be biased because she is, I don't know, I mean, fill in the blank. She can't be biased, but everybody else can be biased. But there's no such thing as bias. If there is no proof of a connection between Trump and the Russians, there's no, what are we doing spending months or even years looking into it? I think it's absolutely tragic that we're not taking advantage of one person who's not afraid to stand up to the elites and try to get something for us, even as Chris just said, as an imperfect person. We'll be right back. 718 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180 to text. there's a famous quote that goes along the lines something like, when a genius appears, you will know this because the dunces are in a confederacy against him. I think that's Jonathan Swift. And it kind of reminds me of Trump, who in his own way, as Chris was saying, has a genius for connecting to people. And I think that his mind works a little bit differently. He's not a person who's daunted. He's not a person who's pushed back. He goes for something, and if it doesn't work out, then he puts it in his back pocket, but he doesn't forget about it. He's a different kind of politician. He's refreshing. He's also aggravating. I'm sure that all of us have listened to something that Trump has said and winced or said, wait a minute, what's going on here? But I think overall, he's going forward with his vision. Now, here's a little bit something from James Clapper, who was the head of the intelligence, which I think I played this, maybe I played it yesterday, I don't know, but I'm going to repeat it just to make the point.
You're talking about the second head of this beast, which is the questions that go to communications and any potential collaboration or collusion with members of the Trump administration. The president, you know his position on this. And the reflection of that in the citizenry is this: where's the proof? It's all unnamed sources. It's all leaks. Nothing has come out that shows any degree of essential wrongdoing or certainly criminality by anyone involved in the campaign. So there must be nothing there.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that. But I also have to say that with specific respect to the issue of collusion, as I've said before, I testified to this effect. I saw no direct evidence of political collusion between the campaign and the Trump campaign and the Russians.
Now, clarify that point.
That's not to say there wasn't any, but I just didn't see evidence of it before I left.
Clarify.
The guy that's in the head of all of this stuff. Now, let's talk about karma. What is karma? It's the law of like and unlike. Now, I had mentioned before, part of magical thinking, and I'm remembering the book, The Golden Bough. The Golden Bough is the great masterpiece in 12 volumes of human religion and paganism, written by Sir James Frazer. And you can now pick it up in a one or two book abridged version. And it's got a lot of interesting, fascinating stuff in there. The law of the same. And the unsame. I've seen these people doing this. There has been witches casting spells against Trump, voodoo dolls, that type of thing. The left seems to believe if they mount their hatred, the hatred is a karmic element. Left doesn't believe in Christianity, Bible, Judaism, and everything. Obviously, doesn't really understand Islam, but the left believes in karma, this element that's taken out of Hinduism. And karma is good acts create good repercussions, bad acts create bad repercussions. And they believe any time that somebody associated with Trump or the right does something that is harmful to the social justice mantra, then it's going to create a karmic event, and it's going to bounce around in the universe until it comes back to haunt these people. And so that is indistinguishable from, and I'm going to pull this, I'm going to get a little, pull it up on the internet to remember exactly how Sir James Frazer expresses this, but it's a pagan idea. And I say paganism for lack of a better way of explaining it. It's superstition. It's magical thinking. All right. Now here's Krauthammer on collusion. The Russians are leaking. I don't understand where the crime is. So the idea is out there now that the Russians are playing games with the Democrats and making them look like fools.
I don't trust the story. The Russians are leaking it clearly on a channel they know we're going to pick up. The Russians are masters of disinformation. They already have Washington with its knickers in a twist over the Russia conspiracy. This is an added twist. Somebody's going to get a hernia here. I think I'll stop the metaphor
if you
at
would.
That point. But We have no idea if it's true. Let's say it is true. Isn't the problem here, the accusation here, that there was some collusion during the campaign with the Russians? Well, everyone agrees if the story is true, it occurred after the campaign during the transition. So unless there's some nefarious connection here, there's no connection to the what was alleged to have happened during the campaign. And lastly, we've had the back channel connections with adversaries for generations. Henry Kissinger had them with the Russians and the Chinese. Hillary had a back channel to establish the opening of negotiations.
All right, so you get the point now there. Listen to this hilarious interaction between John Sununu and CNN's Allison Camerota, who sounds like a complete robot, a propaganda robot. The idea has been fallen in love with in the media. Trump is connected to Russia. Therefore, it has to be chased to the ends of the earth, regardless if there's any evidence.
Investigation. So let's bring in former Republican Governor of New Hampshire, John Sununu. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning. How are you, Allison?
I'm well. Let's dive into all of these different Russia threads, because I want to gauge your feelings on these separately. Let's talk about what our Jim Sciutto is breaking this morning in terms of reporting. There were these intercepted communications picked up by our intel agencies that heard Russian government officials talking about some kind of what they called derogatory information they had on Donald Trump, then a candidate, and whether or not they could use it to leverage the Trump campaign. Are you troubled?
In the 2016 campaign, that's right. I came on your show with derogatory business information on Donald Trump during the primary. Why is it a surprise? Why is it a news story that the Russians in Washington would convey the same material to the Russians in Moscow? The same story that you're quoting at the bottom of the story noted that the same sources that gave your reporter that information conceded that it was possible that the Russians were exaggerating or even making it up.
Yeah.
Why is this even a story worth talking about?
It's only a news story, you're right, if, as part of the investigative thread, it turns out they were able to leverage the Trump campaign and they were able to somehow use the information they had to help get the Trump campaign to do something that they wanted them to do. So this is just one more thread down that line where, as you know, congressional committees and the FBI are trying to figure out if they can connect those dots.
Everybody was talking about Trump's business problems. Why is that news now again? Look, let's put this whole thing in context. You have to tell me what you think the veniality was that they could have conveyed.
Well, do you think that Jared Kushner, in attempting to set up a back channel, as has been reported, do you think that the Trump campaign wanted something out of the Russians and that there was some sort of dovetailing of agendas?
In the 10 weeks between an election and an inauguration, there is a lot of potential members of an administration with all kinds of folks. When I was named chief of staff, a lot of ambassadors that were slight acquaintances tried to become good friends in that 10 weeks. It is not unusual. You guys have made back channel a derogatory term. A back channel is a positive asset. Nixon could not have done China without a back channel.
Yes, even
Kennedy
if
you use back channels.
During the Cuban Missile
Go
Crisis.
Ahead.
I mean, so you're saying that during the transition, when there's another president, that you're comfortable with the incoming administration using a back channel, if the reporting is correct, using Russian equipment so as not to be caught on the U.S. surveillance and intelligence equipment. You're comfortable with that kind of back channel.
Well, let's speculate on why. I don't think it happened that way, but let's speculate on why it might have happened. There might have been concern that the intelligence community was feeding Obama the information that he probably shouldn't have had. And you know what? With what you're reporting now on what has come out from deep sources in the intelligence community, if that was a concern, and I doubt it was, but if that was a concern, they were pretty smart to have those feelings, weren't they?
is there anything about the Russia investigation connected to the Trump campaign that troubles you?
Yeah, the reporting that's taking place and the exaggeration of veniality and the suggestion. Look, it's now 7 months since the election. And to this day, no one has cited a single piece of evidence. In your last session, you guys were patting yourselves on the back because you said Clapper had passed it off, the responsibility off to the FBI. But you forget that in the last weeks of the administration, Obama allowed all his intelligence agencies to share their information. And there is no question in my mind that when that happened, since Clapper's group had originated this, that anything the FBI had would have gone back to Clapper. So it's nice for Clapper to try and wash his hands of it by throwing it in the FBI's lap, but he had access in those days to whatever the FBI had. There is nothing there.
So Jared Kushner, meeting with a major Russian banker of a massive bank that has connections to Vladimir Putin, nothing to see there.
Well, tell me what you think is to see there, and I'll comment on it.
What do you think would be the motivation?
I don't think there's anything there.
So why would they do it?
During the 10 weeks, everybody is trying to meet somebody who's going to be in the administration.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who's involved in business, everybody who's involved in politics. I can't tell you how many people tried to meet with me between
and
the time I was
did you meet with a
staff.
Russian banker when everybody tried to meet with you?
No, but I had breakfast with the vice president at the Russian embassy, and a lot of folks there started talking to me.
Mm-hmm. And would you have carved out time to meet with a Russian banker with ties to Vladimir Putin if he asked?
I'm not even sure what would have happened if that had happened. First of all, Putin wasn't there. But look, you're asking hypotheticals on hypotheticals.
Well, I'm trying to actually take your temperature. I'm trying to gauge your comfort level with all of this.
My comfort level, the only discomfort I have is with folks in the media.
All right, you see what's happening there. We do have a phone call. Thanks for the call. Who's this? Hey, what's up, man? Go ahead.
The left's desperate, and I mean it is the most desperate thing I've ever seen.
Obvious.
Where they will take three normal relational situations that occur after an election but before an inauguration. It's happened with every administration. Who knows, maybe since the beginning of our country, because there is going to be a change. The other countries want to know what the changes might be. And you know the Obama administration did the same thing, and it's just this desperate left-wing
it's amazing
media attempt to make
absolutely amazing.
And I think they're selling themselves down the river because I think the American people are onto it, and we don't even listen to them anymore.
Right. So that's the question. That's the question. Is it possible that we're getting poisoned by so much anti-Trump? If everything he does is negative, he's a monster. You either buy into the idea that he's a monster like Frankie, or you say, wait a minute, if I take it the conversation's over. You either buy into the idea that he is a monster, or you don't. If you don't, then the media itself becomes poisonous to your mind. 735. And as a matter of fact, Scott Pelley, the top anti-Trump news anchor, has just been removed of his post. He was called Poison Pelly because he screamed at somebody from the New York Post, "You wouldn't make it at CBS News for 10 seconds. Poison Pelly gone." We'll be right back. Now, okay, let me get to these gosh dang headlines. Kathy Griffin beheads Trump and now is apologizing for it. JetBlue flight diverted after laptop catches fire. Per capita taxes more than doubled since JFK. JFK was a supply side open market guy. Duterte hits back at Chelsea Clinton, and these are all from Drudge. What was your reaction when your father was blanking Monica? Wiener is back in, and I got a little bit on that. Newborn starts walking minutes after being born. He may be a future who's Bolt. What's that guy's name? The sprinter. Trump fun with viral tweet. Impatience with GOP. When are they going to start enacting all of what the people want? Billionaire space mogul, aliens already on Earth. Study. Your brain may eat itself when you're overtired. Go back and take that nap. Satan worshipers disavow Kathy Griffin after a grotesque Trump behead. Even Satan worshipers have got standards, after all. Did she break the law? Man arrested with guns, ammo at Trump Hotel in D.C. showdown. ICE agent forced to call backup after residents stop arrest. Social justice warriors stopping an arrest. 180 days in jail for not giving cops iPhone passcode in another case. Media is yawning at Venezuela's spiraling socialist nightmare. We've talked about it many times on this show. They have to go to the zoo, not to pet animals, but to kill them so they can have some meat. And study is finding that ABC, CBS, NBC barely covers left-wing catastrophe in Venezuela. Why? It doesn't fit into their narrative. Berkeley, very, very socialist city, banning plastic straws. Oh, good. That'll save the planet. NASA is trying to touch the sun in an unprecedented mission. And Route 66 is roaring back to life. People want to drive down that old road and relive America's heyday. And the group of people that manages these super funds, hedge funds, the hedge funds are imploding because they found that they're getting about 5% return. People can get better than that on their own. Trump pulling out of the Paris global warming deal. Los Angeles law enforcement high alert after gang threat. Suicide rate soars among Chicago cops. And a guy spit on the sidewalk and they picked it up and the cops got the spitter on two murder charges. 53% saying media leaks are an act of treason out of the White House. These holdovers, these dead enders, these Obamatons, Obamanauts. And all right, so let me get over to sympathetic magic. This is, you know, one of the themes today I'm throwing out to you. Sympathetic magic, what is it? Well, Sir James Frazier, the great genius who, at least a very good gatherer of information, and he put it into an interesting book. He lays out sympathetic magic at the top, the law of sympathy on the left, homeopathic magic, the law of similarity on the left, and on the right, contagious magic, law of contact, right? What does that mean? All right. It means the same brings the same. It's karma. I don't want to have to read out of here, but if you take a voodoo doll and you throw the voodoo doll in the water, and then you say, this person is going to drown. I mean, it's simplistic. And that's the left's idea, is that Trump has done so many evil things that he's bringing down judgment, not from God, but from karma. So it's very, very simplistic, and it is what drives people on the left who have no religious center, like Frankie, around the bend, wanting Trump to crash and burn. All right, another story that I mentioned. I was going to play a clip for you, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to explain it to you because we're running out of time. There is an idea out there, and this was gathered by the people that were basically the bag man, the guy that carried the clubs for Tiger Woods in his last few years, three or four. I can't remember his name. This guy had some observations about Tiger Woods that was interesting. You know, this guy only makes $50,000. Tiger Woods is a famous cheapskate. He doesn't tip very well. He's worth something like $750 million. He doesn't believe in tipping, which I find kind of sad. But anyway, you've got the story of Tiger is that this guy, whatever this guy's name was, been around the game a long time. His observation was that Tiger Woods lost the he lost the love of what he was doing, and he wanted to bail out of Tiger Woods Incorporated, so he kind of sabotaged himself. Now, the way that Tiger got caught cheating was that there were some friends who came to, some girls that had come to New York or L.A., someplace like that, and they ran into Uchitel, this lady that was dating Tiger, having an affair with him, and Uchitel just kind of casually mentions that she's dating Tiger and what he's like and the sack and everything. This other girl basically ends up calling the Inquirer and says, I got a heck of a story for you. The Inquirer follows up on it, and because the girl, Uchitel, had snubbed this lady the last time that they had talked, this lady, who was given an offer by Tiger Woods's company, Tiger Woods, $200,000 or whatever, if she would back off the story, decides to go forward with the Inquirer. And that started the dominoes fall. And so Tiger Woods is called up and told that, you know, by his, I think his attorney, they've got the story that they're about to put out on you in the Inquirer. This had happened before, and then Tiger agreed to go on the cover of a magazine that's owned by the same company. Time, it didn't work out. Tiger Woods comes home and tells his wife that there's a story out there that he had an affair with somebody. It's a total lie. And then he texts somebody, and he takes an Ambien, and he goes to bed. So he's, like, totally knocked out. His wife starts going through his phone, and she calls the number. She texts the number and then calls the number that he last texted, and this lady, Uchitel, picks up the phone and says, hello, Tiger, how you doing? And so his Tiger's wife then figures out that he is indeed having an affair. And that's when she wakes him up to confront him. And Tiger Woods is, like, drugged out of his mind, runs out to his car and jumps into it to escape his wife, who was apparently picked up a golf club, which is apparently something that was common in the house, and starts chasing him down, you know, through the house and outside. He jumps into his car and he's disoriented because he takes Ambien. He can't sleep. He takes an Ambien. He drives down the street, his wife chasing him in the middle of the night with a golf club. He wrecks into a fire hydrant and a tree. And then when a surgeon next door hears the wreck, calls the police. The police come out. The medics come out. He's got a split lip. That to this day don't know if he split his lip on the steering wheel or on the end of a one wood or a three iron. So that's how it started to come apart. But he was living a very dangerous, reckless life. And so the theory of this guy was that Tiger Woods had gotten sick of Tiger Incorporated and he wanted off. And he didn't have the willpower anymore. And so he was leading this life in which he was this family man. And, you know, he's this great sponsor for all of these. You know, he's a great role model for all these ads for Buick and Nike and all these other things. And really living a double life. And the double life was who he really was. He was putting on a front to act like a family man. And he just got sick of it, and he got sick of chasing after the dream. He got sick of golf perfection. As time went on, he was less dedicated to golf, but he was still so much better than other people. He kept winning. But then in 2010, I think he'd won his last, major. And so now they say that, number one, he got fixated on the SEALs, on the special forces, and he wanted to join them. And it really had to be talked out of this, that he got so, and then all of his injuries came not from golf, but they came from this super training that he was, like, SEAL-like training that he was doing. Isn't that kind of a fascinating story? And so he ends up bailing and not passing Jack Nicklaus, because he just got sick of playing the role of Tiger Woods. And when they asked him, I was going to do some clips on this, but it's better to just tell you, he was being interviewed by Charlie Rose, and Charlie Rose says, what's your biggest regret. And anybody with a brain is going to think, well, it's having an affair on my wife, right? Because that was how the beginning of the end started. But he didn't say that at all. He said that his biggest regret was leaving Stanford early. And so now it seems like he's, you know, he's gotten a DUI, and it just seems like he's lost. And I'm just wondering, you know, it seems to me like a spiritual crisis. Like, he climbed Mount Everest over and over again in the search for greatness in golf, in that, you know, that and being famous and being fabulously wealthy. Before he got in the wreck, he was very quickly coming up on $1 billion. He was loved by everybody, and that didn't satisfy him. And so, and all the women and all the fame didn't satisfy him. And so he realized he was running on empty. That's what I pick up. And he got out of that life. Now, is he more satisfied now? Probably not, but he has less pressure on himself to perform as this family man. So, interesting story. We'll see where he goes. He needs a, in my opinion, well, doesn't he need a come to Jesus moment? 752, 753, we'll be right back to finish her up. Kelly O'Connell, AM Lush Cruises, AM 1450, 523, 1450. I'll hit your texts. Here is a text. Rush says the media is the weaponized spear of the Democratic Party. Everything any Trump hater says is taken verbatim from CNN or Colbert. It's embarrassing for the liberal haters, but so true. And I agree with the last caller that the American people are onto them. That's why when people come out and blame Trump for the bus stabbing in Portland, they come across as complete fruitcakes. And that Tiger had a monumental midlife crisis is not surprising. Look at what he achieved. Basically, had his life mapped out for him as a youth. And did he ever have a hard time in his Mount Everest of a career climb? Or is it more like a stroll in the park? Sooner or later, we all have to do some self-analysis. It's not something anyone can teach us. The work and pain has to be worked through, warts and all. All right, that's just one. Trumper is so burnt toast. Thanks, Frankie. Your eloquence has really put a tear in my eye. Fox News is the fake news that backs a fake president. Kathy. Kathy, running out of time here, or I'd run out, I would read your 300-word text. Here's for Mr. Wiener.
Class attention. Forward march. Oh, I'd love to be an Oscar Mayer Wiener. That is what I truly like to be. Because if I were an Oscar Mayer Wiener, everyone would be in love with me.
All right. So Huma Abedin taking Wiener home. Maybe because of her background in Islam, she's not offended by a guy that has extra women. I'm just asking. All right. Here is the bus from Tom Papa.
I like being here in L.A. I live in New York most of the time. It's nice having a car, being able to drive around. That's a treat. I don't like the bus. What is it about the bus? And you just build that structure. Just, it doesn't matter where you put it, what country, what state, it's just a horrible experience getting on the bus. It wouldn't be so bad if it didn't stop and pick up all those other people, but horrible people on the bus. Everyone has a limp or a lazy eye or a tail. It's like the garbage truck for human trash. I get the same feeling on the bus that I get when I shop at Kmart, you know what I mean? That I'm better than everyone else there. You know what I mean? You're in those bad stores, like, well, I'm here because it's a bargain, but these freaks, they like it here. I'm buying a hammer. This guy's trying on a three-piece suit. It's made by Wrangler. We're always better than the other guy, aren't we? Always. We always think we are. And we're not really. You know better than anybody else. When I'm on that bus looking across the aisle at a guy in a Santa hat and goggles, and he's looking back at me, we're both thinking the same thing. Jackass. Look at that guy in his goggles. He's looking back. Poor fella. He doesn't have any goggles.